It is Tuesday, May 22nd, 7 days from the turnover of my odometer. You are in the Senate Education and General Government Committee. Please remember to turn off your cell phones, PDAs, electronic devices, or we ask you to make a contribution to Common School Fund. On the table over there are the sign-up sheets, and Senator Metzger, you have a motion for me.
I do. I mean, it's hard to believe this late in session, but I would like to introduce...
Oh, hang on. I got to do a work session. We'll open a work session.
And I'd like to introduce LC-3879 as a committee bill.
Cool. Senator Metzger introduces LC-3879 as a committee bill.
And I can just briefly let the committee know.
Yeah, why don't you tell
us? Oh, no, let's keep them guessing.
That's the bill.
What it is.
So I've got enough calls to know that people are curious. It commends the outgoing Portland State University president.
Oh, Daniel Bernstein. You know, don't they know when they sign up they're not allowed to leave? He's done a good job. So that's what that's all about. Any objection? Hearing none? Boom. The committee bill. That was easy. I wish it would work that way around my house. Okay. And we are going to go into work session. And where's the rest of my committee? I don't know. Let's see. I'm not going to wait for them. So we're going to open a work session on House Bill 2263A. Ms. Richardson, would you bring us up to date, please?
I would be happy to. I know in this case we're just going to briefly open the work session, have Representative Comp testify so I can outline the amendments that she'll speak to, or I can go through the whole shebang. What's your preference?
And then we're just going to close it and come back to it. Why don't we do that so Representative Comp can go on with her other duties?
So just mention the two amendments that she would speak to.
Right.
For your reference, members of the committee, Representative Comp will speak to the -A6 amendments and the -A8 amendments. Briefly, those direct the Department of Education to contract with a nonprofit entity to either offer or administer, in collaboration with the Department of Education, a nationally normed assessment to all grade 10 students in order to predict the success of students on college entrance exams. It provides contractor selection criteria. Requires provision of the assessment during the 2007-2008 and the A6s, or the 2008-2009 and the A8s during those school years. And it permits expenditure of schools from the state school fund that would otherwise go to education service districts for the contracts.
Okay.
They both declare an emergency, and one would take effect upon passage, the other effect July 1st, 2007.
Okay, great. Representative Comp. You're on deck. And then when we're done here, we'll close it and come back to this bill because there's a lot of amendments.
Chair Walker and committee, thank you for allowing me to testify this morning on House Bill 2263. For the record, my name is Representative Betty Comp, and I represent House District 22. I come here today in support of the -8s. The -8s are something that is a tool to, beyond possibly predicting whether a student's going to be successful in college, but it's a test that would share with students as they finish 10th grade whether they're ready for AP courses, other college classes, and just to see where they stand. As a school administrator in a district like Woodburn, frequently there's many children that just don't think they have what it takes to be successful at a collegiate level. And it's amazing when you do a national norm reference test and they go, okay, I am smart. You can tell them that they've got what it takes, but sometimes it's that just that affirmation of really seeing a good test score. The other thing that I really like about this and doing a national norm assessment is that, again, parents can say, well, this is just the test that Oregon gives or what Washington gives or California. This gives them a true indicator if their child is needing support to reach their goals and their test score is really low. It's the same thing. Then schools now will have an opportunity, I believe it's $260 million in the school improvement funds, to say, okay, these students need to get to this point so they're successful in society, whether it's moving on to the community college level or to the four-year institution. I wholeheartedly embrace the governor's vision of having 40% of our students graduate with a bachelor's degree, 40% of them graduate with an associate's degree or something similar in that in the workforce, and that all students graduate, a whole 100% of them graduate from high school. And I know that's a high bar, but until we have pieces like this in place, we won't be able to tell where we're at in reaching that goal. And so that's the gist of the amendments. It's going to identify students with high potential to excel in advanced placement. It'll help students, and I've had students that have done this assessment even at the middle school level, to be eligible for a National Merit Scholarship Program, Scholar Program. And then the important point of a lot of these things is that it also helps with technology. This assessment would be available, would be online, and many schools are looking at how they combine those with career information system, so a student absolutely will get an individual analysis to see where they might want to head in the future. So there's many numerous things that this would help do. This is an assessment that is a mere cost of $11 for the, it'd be a 10th grade assessment. That's about 40 to 45,000 students. And so then there is a fiscal that we believe that should come out of the state school fund. And I'm open to any questions. And we have other people, Matt Marquis will be talking later or be available for questions also on this bill.
Okay. Any questions of Representative Comp before we let her go?
And before I leave, I absolutely am requesting your support.
Well, we understood that much.
Well, we don't want to overlook the obvious.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that, Representative Comp, and I think we'll get into more detailed questions when we open up the hearing again. So I thank you very much for coming over.
And just one other amendment that I would recommend. When we worked this bill in the House, it had... We were kind of coming and going on what was best for our students, for particularly in for SimCam. And there's a dash fives in here about still continuing to have a state school report card.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's an important piece that was pulled out of the original bill that we sent you, and I believe that it would be a nice re-addition. So that's another one of your amendments that are coming.
Okay. Well, I'm sure someone's going to be testifying about
yes.
that.
Yes. But okay. Well, without saying much, when we have the No Child Left Behind Act and the adequate yearly progress reports that are required by the federal statutes, it's really nice to have something that's a little more user-friendly and local control for parents in our communities, and that's what the school report card does.
Okay.
You could actually read it.
Or Senator Cruz. I always
did that was a deja vu thing.
Yeah, well, it's whenever we have a representative testify, I start to call you representative again, but it takes us back to our old days here in the House.
Yes.
Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Comp, have you seen the Dash 9?
I have not seen the Dash 9.
So I would love for your input on
that. Yes, I will review them real quick.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you. Thanks very much. We'll close the work session on House Bill 2263 and come back to that. We'll open a work session on House Bill 2848 so we can have Representative Gelser testify. And Ms. Richardson, tell us what's going on here.
Madam Chair, we've heard House Bill 2848 before. It modifies certain high school diploma requirements from years to credits, requires the award of modified diplomas to students who meet the State Board of Education requirements but do not satisfy diploma requirements, requires an award of alternative certificates to students who meet requirements established by a school district board or public charter school but does not meet diploma requirements, permits the recipient of a modified diploma or alternative certificate to participate in graduation ceremonies with their class. It declares an emergency and take effect July 1st, 2007.
Okay, colleagues, this seems like a simple little bill, and it's just become a little complicated as we try to hone down the language. If you recall, we were a little concerned that the language was too broad and school districts would be starting to hand out these modified diplomas when they couldn't invest in the teacher time or the classroom time to bring students up to the new graduation requirements. So we have been attempting to make some changes to the language. I think, Representative Gelser, you're going to talk about your amendment, and Senator Cruz and I have been working on an amendment as well. So we'll have a conversation about all of them. So welcome.
Thank you, Chair Walker. For the record, I am Sarah Gelser. I'm the state representative from House District 16, which is Corvallis and Philomath. Senator Morse is my senator. I believe that my amendments, I was gone yesterday and ended up with a pile of amendments on my desk, but I'm pretty sure that the Dash 3 amendments are mine. They are very similar to one another. The goal here was simply to add some language that put some sideboards on the modified diploma to make certain that these diplomas were being awarded to students who, through no fault of their own, were not able to meet content standards. This was complicated by the fact that we can't refer to anything as a special education diploma because of federal law. I believe if my note is correct about the amendment that you're working on, they're very similar except for lines 11 and 12, a documented history of personal challenges directly related to the capacity of achievement would be removed. I don't have a problem with removing that. I think that A and B pretty much cover the circumstances, and if not, we can certainly come back in another legislative session.
Well, and I hold on. I agree with you, and Senator Cruz and I yesterday spoke about that on the floor, and we just thought that one was way wide open. And, personal challenges, history of personal challenges, what does that mean? Anything could fit in that, like the kitchen sink. So that's why we took that out. So if you take a look, Representative Gelser, your Dash 3 is similar, except for Section 2A, lines 14 through 19 of your Dash 3 mm-hmm. are different than lines 12 through 16 of the Dash 8, which is our final amendment. So do you have a Dash 8?
I do not have a Dash 8.
Okay, let's get you a Dash 8. And colleagues, the Dash 4s were Senator Cruz and I's our first attempt, so those are done.
Right.
We're not doing those. The Dash 2 is sort of a standalone amendment that we drafted into the Dash 8. So if you just focus your attention on the Dash 8 and the Dash 3, then we can talk about the differences. So, Representative Gelser, look at your Section 2A, which is 14 through 19 mm-hmm. on your Dash 3, and then look at lines 12 through 16 on the Dash 8. There are a few differences there.
And just with a quick perusal here, that looks good to
Which
me.
One?
The Dash 8s.
Okay.
That language at the end of the Dash 8. It appears that the intent here is to make sure that the State Board of Ed submits to an interim committee the rules that they're developing next February.
Yeah, Madam Chair, and it was, and it's not just for, it's for all diplomas, so it's right. a broad scope, and which we thought was appropriate. So.
Absolutely.
Okay, so you're good with the Dash 8?
I'm very comfortable with the Dash 8s. I think that they meet the goal. I certainly, it was not my intention in introducing this bill to create avenues for decreasing standards for some students, but instead to increase standards for students who struggle. I really think that this opportunity will help students achieve more.
Right. Well, we understood that, and we really applaud you for what you were trying to do. We're just trying to
help.
Be a little careful.
Thank you.
Okay, great. Well, we'll cross off the Dash 3s, the Dash 2s, and the Dash 4s, and I'll ask Senator Westland what your question is.
Did I hear you correctly that the Dash 2s have been incorporated into the Dash 8s?
That's correct.
Yes.
Okay, I'm trying.
They are.
Well, it's worded slightly differently.
It's worded slightly differently, but pretty much the same.
It would be the same as Section 7 and the 8s. The intent is.
I don't know if I hold English. And then I'm just trying to get my arm wrapped around the Dash 2s, even though I know it's in the 8s. The State Board of Education shall submit for review by the legislative committees on education or the interim legislative committees on education as appropriate any proposed rule
mm-hmm.
to implement requirements
mm-hmm.
for a diploma, modified diploma. Then that we've got them in rule.
May I?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Help him out.
Help me out.
The Board of Ed is going to be promulgating rules for the new graduation requirements.
Right.
And what we are asking in this bill is to have a conversation as they move forward in that process.
Not just a conversation about the modified diploma, but about all the new diploma requirements.
All new diploma requirements. It's just a touchstone, basically, is what we're looking for, is so that we're connected to the ongoing process.
Does that answer your question?
So it's submit for review.
Mm-hmm.
Here it is. Plop.
Mm-hmm.
See ya. Committee doesn't have to approve them.
No, it's not our job to approve
right,
them.
Right, that's what I was...
It's our job to review them and give input back, and that's what we're proposing here.
They are charged with implementing any new requirements. I mean, they are charged with that. Legislature can override them, as Chair Berger testified when at the beginning of the session when he came in and talked about the duties of the State Board. We can override anything they do if we wish.
Yeah, if we want to pass a law to do it, we
can. Our prerogative.
That's not our intent. Our intent is to be collaborative as the process moves forward.
So they'll come in and submit the proposed rules, and we'll take a look at them and have comment on them.
But it's non-binding, because it can't be.
And if you don't like what they do, then we come back in February or January and undo what they do or make changes as we wish.
Okay, I think I'm comfortable with that as I think I understand it.
Okay. Any other questions from the committee? Representative Gelser, do you have anything else?
I had one question and one comment. May I ask the question first?
Sure.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If the State Board of Education is coming back to submit the rules for review, they would still be bound by the effective date of the bill, correct? That the modified diploma would be available beginning in the 08-09 school year. So it wouldn't be a way to get around doing this by not submitting the rules, having them ready by our February session.
My understanding, Representative, would be that the bill that we pass will have an effective date.
Okay.
And anything that we write in here that comes in for review, we review it, but the effective date is the effective date,
okay.
And they better darn well get it done so that they can meet the effective date, and I think they understand that.
Great, thank you. And then I just wanted to thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Cruz, for your efforts to get this right in the Department of Ed as well, for the time that they've put into putting this together. I'm very grateful and hope that you will support the bill and move it to the floor.
Okay, great. Was there a Department of Ed? Did you want to come up and testify? I think we're all good to go. Okay.
I got a question.
Yep.
Are we just putting the dash 8s into the House Bill 2848?
Correct.
Okay. I guess just what Representative Gelser was pointing out, because the existing bill has an emergency clause, July 1, 2007.
Mm.
So, I mean, just getting back to your question about rules and timing, if the bill takes effect 07, then, and I understand that the school year that these would apply is 08-09. I just wanted to wonder if that, does that emergency clause do anything about the clock, I guess, for the dash 8s, or is that affected more by Section 9, by when the diplomas would be available? Maybe that's the operative section, and the emergency clause doesn't really do anything.
Representative Gelser, do you have a response?
I would. Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Metzger. My understanding was that the emergency clause kind of gave the push to begin the development of the rules,
right.
So that the rules would be developed in time to begin offering the diplomas.
Right. So it is so really it is the Section 9. It is the target date. Okay, I'm comfortable with that. I got it.
Because these diplomas are supposed to be offered in the 08-09 school year.
Right. Yeah. So the emergency clause just kickstarts, but the implementation date is the implementation date. So
incubation date.
Okay. Thank you for questioning that, Senator Metzger.
All right.
Oh, we all satisfied then?
Good to go.
Cool. Okay, well, we're in work session. Have I got a motion?
Madam Chair, I move the dash 8 amendment to House Bill 2848.
Senator Cruz moves the dash 8 amendments to House Bill 2848. Any further discussion about that? Any objection?
So ordered.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 48.
I'm sorry. We've got a conflict amendment that we need to adopt. I didn't expect you guys to do this so quickly.
Well, I'm just like, we've got conflicts amendment all over the place today.
Can you, that's the dash, it's the dash 7th, Heather?
Well, tell them I don't have.
They're coming up. Those are the conflict amendments.
The Warren amendments.
This morning. Okay. So the dash 7s we would pass with the dash 8s in order to make this work with 2263 that we will talk about later.
Hopefully pass today and get that one off our plate. Okay, so do you all want to, these are just conflict amendments, colleagues. There's nothing new in here. It looks like a lot, but it is simply.
And Madam Chair, we knew it was coming.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
And I think it's all, we all agreed upon. So, Madam Chair, I'll move the dash 7 amendments to House Bill 2848.
Okay. Senator Cruz moves the dash 7 amendments to House Bill 2848. Any questions? Do you need more time? You okay, everybody? Everybody's okay?
As long as there's just conflict and there's just a lot of black.
I know, there's
in here,
a lot of black in here, but that's what we were told by legislative counsel.
Can we just hold on just a second here? I just want to.
Just so you know,
I'm looking at page 5, and I just want to make sure.
And I think we've got a conflict amendment for another bill today. They're all in this bill.
For example, okay, let me look here.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, I just point out that there were three bills that related, and the conflict amendments for all three are rolled into this. More of the good work by Cindy Hunt, and my confidence in her work is at a very high level.
And Ann O'Brien in legislative conflicts.
Right. Yeah. And for instance, if you look on page 3 of the conflict amendments, it says, on line 15, if House Bill 2606 becomes law,
right,
and House Bill 2263 does not become law, Section 1 of this 2007 Act is repealed, blah, 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 blah. And you'll see that throughout, Senator Metzger, and that's why there's so much black. And again, you see it on page 5.
And there she is.
Cindy, oh, thanks. Just can you come on up and just make sure that we're good with what we're saying here?
Good morning. Cindy Hunt, Senior Deputy Legislative Counsel. I was watching on my television.
I'm so glad you watch us all the time. Make sure we don't screw up.
Is this, Ms. Hunt, is this a replacement for the bill? I mean, it kind of looks like it's most of the bills in here. We're calling the conflict amendment.
Chair Walker, Senator Metzger, the dash 7 amendments aren't a total replacement for the bill. They're kind of an add-on to the bill, but they are a replacement for the dash 8 amendments. They're so long.
They're a replacement.
We're going to be undoing that motion.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Reason the dash 7s are so long is that you have a three-way conflict in front of you this morning. And it involves the House Bill 2848, 2263, and 2606. All three of these bills amend the high school graduation statute. And so the reason the dash 7s are so long is there's a lot of, if this bill passes and this one does, but not this one, this is what happens. If all three pass, this is what happens. So there's multiple sections amending really the same section based on which of these bills passes, or if two pass and not one, and that kind of thing. So what we did, though, when we were doing the conflict amendments, is we combined essentially all of the bills together and kept the substance out of all of them.
God, that would be the worst job in LC, I have to tell you, is if this passes and if that, I mean, what if the combination of them don't pass the way you expect?
Chair Walker, we have two senior copy editors that is our conflicts team. I hope they're watching right now. And so, because they have a very difficult job, because any bill that passes out
right
of the
now.
Second house, any bill or any amendment, your staff calls them and says, is there a conflict with any other bill? And they check.
Oh, my.
Uh-huh. And I know that the one spent all day yesterday on these particular ones.
I think I would have pulled my eyebrow hairs out rather than have to do this.
Oh, that's not.
I mean, That's just scary.
Okay.
All right. So now that we...
let's take away 8.7 and move on.
Madam Chair?
Yeah.
Cindy, where are the eights incorporated in the sevens?
Page seven. And let me find my eight.
Okay.
So you anticipated we were passing the eights.
Okay,
yes, we did, Chair Walker.
I just
want
to make sure that somehow C didn't slip back in there, so which it didn't. So
document history of a medical condition. Okay. Well,
and yeah, the eights are in the dash sevens a couple of places actually. I mean, the first time they appear is on page 2 and 3. For example, and so that section is dealing with the situation of if 2263 becomes law and 2606 does not, this is what happens.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So if we just pass all three today,
you're good.
We're good.
Yeah. Yeah.
If we don't, we're still good, but it makes it easier if we just...
It makes it easier, yeah.
Okay.
And the other thing that our conflicts team decided it was easier, believe it or not, to put in the conflicts amendments into 2848 and not the other two bills. So the other two bills will be a little cleaner when you get to those.
Okay. So we need this bill. Otherwise, we have to send the poor conflict in.
They'll be conflicted really bad.
Actually.
I have to meet these people. I really have to pat them on the back.
Okay. Madam Chair,
I
move we suspend the rules to reconsider the vote by which we passed the dash 8 amendments to House Bill 2848.
Senator Cruz moves that we reconsider the vote by which we passed the dash 8 amendments to House Bill 2848. Any objection? So ordered. Okay, now we got to unring that bell.
At this point, we reconsidered the vote, so...
So they're not on the table, or they are on the table?
Are they on the table at this point?
Yeah.
So, Madam Chair, at this point, I will withdraw my motion on the dash A8 amendments.
Very good. Well,
And so the motion is now withdrawn, and so Madam A8
Well,
Chair,
it's not withdrawn until we agree to withdraw it, or can you withdraw it yourself?
I made the motion.
Okay, he's made a motion to withdraw the dash 8.
Yeah, so the
I think we need to vote on it. I think we
Any objection?
Fine.
None.
All right, now we
go. Cool.
Madam Chair.
This is a challenge this morning.
Yeah, Cindy would have been 3 minutes quicker. But
you guys are so quick.
We will qualify for a modified diploma if we can get through this.
Yes, we will. Madam Chair, so we have a clean table at this point.
Oh, we do. It's
okay.
A clean table.
Clean table. Madam Chair, I move the dash 7 amendment to House Bill 2848.
Fabulous. Senator Cruz moves the dash 7 amendment to House Bill 2848. Any discussion? You're all going to get that modified diploma today. Okay. So ordered. Now.
Okay. We're ready now, right?
We're ready to rock.
Okay. Madam Chair, I move House Bill. Thank you, Cindy.
Yep. Thank you very much.
And thank the folks down there that did this hard work. So I move House Bill 2848 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2848 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Ms. Gravel, you're on.
Senator Metzger?
Aye.
Senator Morris?
Aye.
Where'd he go?
Senator Westheim?
Well, he was
somewhere.
Here. Excuse.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Chair Walker?
Aye. Okay, thank you. That bill is approved, voted on, and sealed, signed, and delivered to the floor. Who would like to carry it?
Delivered. I'm yours. I'll carry it.
Good. You can do your little song.
I'm going to ask you a lot of questions about the conflict amendments.
Oh, please. You are a conflict.
That's true.
Okay, we'll close the work session on House Bill 2848. we will now open a public hearing on House Bill 2750. We are just now going down the list, everyone, so if you're waiting for your bill, it is just going to be down the list. So,
reports on computers.
Ms. Richardson, tell us about this bill, please.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2750 creates a task force on school computers, requires the task force to report to legislature no later than February 1st, 2009, declares an emergency and will take effect July 1st, 2007. We have a dash one amendment in front of us that would bar task force members from receiving compensation or reimbursement of expenses for their service on the task force.
Okay, that gives this no fiscal, I'm assuming. Former Representative Al King and Tom Lindley from Springfield Schools.
Yeah.
And Representative Beyer.
Hi.
Cool. Hi.
Good to see you. Do you want to go first?
Sure.
Yeah, she probably has to get on the floor.
Not
Do you
yet.
Have floor session this
Not
morning?
Not until 10.
Oh, lucky.
Yeah. So thank you, Madam Chair and Committee. My name is Representative Terry Beyer, representing the City of Springfield, House District 12. House Bill 2750 was kind of a brain child of former Representative Al King and I. And while we would love to have come and said, help us buy computers for all students, I think we realized that that was pure folly. So this bill creates a task force on the use of computers in schools, and currently there are a number of schools throughout the state that are using computers in the classroom, which is in Springfield. It was one of the first one-to-one initiatives in the state. Apple provided computers for an entire middle school class. They had them 24/7. The achievements that were made by this school were just recently recognized by the State Department of Education. And what we were looking for is a way to get more computers in the hands of kids. And as the district will talk, they certainly learned a few lessons. I've since, when we introduced this, learned that Howard Elementary in Eugene is in the middle of a laptop initiative for an elementary school. They took a lot of lessons from Mr. Lindley here and Springfield in how they shouldn't do it. Being one of the pioneers, we certainly learned a number of lessons in this. The state of Oregon, and I'm sure you'll hear that too, is also involved in some initiatives in some smaller districts throughout the state, which have certainly leveraged a lot of private dollars. Theirs, I think, was with, it was not with Apple. Now I can't remember which computer company donated those computers. But the idea is basically to get people together, learn how what's working, why it's working, and how to provide recommendations on how we can provide computers to students in a cost-effective manner, and whether that's through bundling or other methods. And there's certainly a lot of knowledge in the state about this. I think that they don't concerns that computers might replace teachers, and that certainly is not what's been true in our district. It's just one more tool that the teachers can use. It's been very effective. I think that we need to keep in mind that our future of our young students lie in the 21st century, and their success will depend largely upon their proficiency in technology and their ability to adapt to increasingly complex and commonplace technologies. So this is the intent of the bill. I know the amendment's there, and I have told the district that I'd be okay, although it always makes me nervous to have to amend a bill and then take it back for concurrence. Although if this would keep it out of the Ways and Means, one way or another, I don't know that the process is going to be any longer. That was just my thoughts on the amendment. And I will go ahead and turn it over to my...
Well, I got, and let me just be frank with you, I got some money allocated in the K-12 budget for the task force that we're going to talk about in a minute on civics education and financial education, because there was a request for civics education and there was like $250,000, or not quite that much, in the budget, so we decided we'd go with the task force. So that's getting funded. But if you were to send this one down, it wouldn't get funded.
Right.
So, because it was really, really difficult to get the money that we got. So it's a very smart thing that we do that amendment here today. Okay. Representative King, it is so nice to see you.
Oh, so good to see you. So Al King with the Springfield School District on the school board. And we're going to be really brief because we know you've got a lot to do, so we'll do the short version. A little bit of the genesis, for this bill, when our district looked to be the first district to put computers, laptop computers, into a classroom, we went and did it in a low-income school that we wanted to bring up performance. 100% of the parents of the kids in that low-income school attended and participated in orientation, for the kids. The kids very quickly modified their learning style. They were getting on the internet. It's real clear now, as we look at how much it takes to get through textbook selection, et cetera, 10 years from now, the primary medium for the kids is going to be on their computers, not in the textbook. So it wasn't just that they got a computer. It was really the whole education system. The course was there, the reading was there, the testing was there, the monitoring is there, the research, is there, that I could foresee that at some point in time we're aware of the TESA issue that happened in the state. When you have this kind of system in place, that extra, level of contracting probably wouldn't be necessary because it would be embedded into programs, like what we're looking at. And so then when I was looking at, how do we do this for more kids in the district? We all have, financial limitations. And so what's the best way to be able to move the effectiveness of this out? And one of my fears would be that if our district said, this is so great, we're going to do this for all the junior highs or all the kids or at it in elementary or high schools, and we make that commitment out of our general fund, and then a year or two later along comes the legislature and we've got a good year and we're going to do it for everybody in the state, and it's like, we already spent the money and it's too late for us to participate in a program. And I'd hate to see that kind of potential disruption. That's occurred in other things before. And so as we looked at it, it was how do we get there? If 10 years from now computer systems like this are probably going to be more dominant than textbooks for the learning styles of the students of today, then what's the most cost-effective way to get there? And we got a lot of smart people in the state. So I think we save millions of dollars by seeing how we can do both buys, how we can do the administrative more effectively statewide. And so that's in hard dollars. But at the same time, for example, I just got this last night in the school board meeting. This is talking about, the top schools in the state according to the, superintendent of education. They won the awards. Our school, Springfield's Middle School and Howard Elementary, the programs that are using these programs are two of the schools that are in these top award programs. And so not only do we have the potential with a task force like this to save millions of dollars, but we also have the ability, I think, to find ways to have millions of dollars of performance improvement happen, in students, and that's another, return on investment. There's more, that I would love to share with you, but I think it's better to keep it short and pass the baton to Mr. Lindley.
Okay. Great.
Mr. Lindley is in charge of our technology program, so he oversaw the institution of this.
Okay. Then maybe, because what I want to hear, Representative Beyer referenced some things that you learned, and I'm out of curiosity, I'd like to hear.
There's something he's going to add, as well, and that's what the state of Maine did.
Okay.
I wanted to add that too.
Okay, great. Thank you.
And so my name is Tom Lindley, and I am the Technology Services Manager at Springfield Public Schools. And I was involved pretty much in all aspects of the implementation of our one-to-one initiative. And we do, we're talking a little bit about our one-to-one initiative. We do a number of other things with technology at the district. We have about 4,500 computers out there. The one-to-one we did was about 350 computers out of middle school. So we use technology in a lot of different ways. One of the things that And so I'd be prepared to answer any questions about, you know, what do these implementations look like, and not that I'll have all the answers, but I will have probably a little information for you. One of the things that we learned is we've had really good experience with the computers. We found that kids really can relate. You know, they talk about the digital natives, the millennial kids, and so forth. Kids can relate to the computers. They like working on them. We've also found that we've seen some increases in student performance in specific areas. We found one of the keys for us is talk about differentiating instruction, where we can provide instruction for low-level kids as well as high-level kids. We found that technology is, in fact, a very good tool for differentiating instruction. We can take software products that actually have the ability to present the same information to a student at the fifth grade reading level as a student at the 11th grade reading level. So it's a really powerful tool for us to deliver instruction to all kids to keep them engaged. And as you know, technology plays an increasingly important role in the workplace, and really for our one-to-one initiative, that learning the technology itself was really kind of a side benefit. Our goal was really to aim at student achievement, to use it as a tool to improve students' ability to read and write and do mathematics. So they're also the byproduct is they are really comfortable with technology, and it's pretty amazing to watch what some of these kids do. I think that one of the keys for us is, recently I went to a conference in, the state of Maine has done some major laptop initiatives with statewide. And in talking to one of the people that's helped run that, who came out and was a keynote speaker at our conference, we're talking about we'd love to be able to roll additional computers out into our schools, one-to-ones. Another thing that we're doing commonly in the district is to roll out laptop computers in carts and so forth into the rooms. But really the barrier for us is cost. And we were comparing notes on our cost, and Dr. Betty Manchester from Maine was saying, we're able to do this for about $300 per kid per year. I said, wow, that's pretty incredible. That's about a third of what we're able to do in a one-to-one environment. And really it came through initiatives such as this, which put the organization, got the right people together in the state, and a statewide initiative was able to bring that cost down. And her comment was, it's really it's a matter of scale, and we're able to provide low cost. So we see that as pretty phenomenal and something that would really benefit the kids of Oregon. I think just in general, to bring additional computers in is really important. One of the things about the school districts is we have a lot of older computers. I think that's pretty much statewide. Mm-hmm. We think about 30% of our computers currently are 7 years old and older within our district. And the idea of bringing new technology, and we really need a way to find a way to do that within the district and statewide to get newer computers that run newer software that really can help the kids in the areas of
Mr. Lindley, I will just tell you that our circuit court system in the state is still using a DOS computer system. That is how bad it is in the state of Oregon. I mean, DOS went out in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
So these are very old computer systems. So you're exactly right. I think this is extremely important that we upgrade our computers everywhere we can. Can you tell us a little bit about some of the things that you learned from the program? I mean, the thought of putting a laptop in the hands of a child 24/7 is a little bit scary. I mean, I have to manage my own laptop, make sure that I don't drop it, and when I go to airports, that they don't kill it when it goes through the X-ray machine, which, you know, they broke the screen on one of mine and refused to pay for it. So, I mean, I'm just looking at grown-ups holding on to the thing. Now, tell me about kids and little laptops.
They didn't remember the FAA mom, did they?
Yeah, they didn't, and I pushed it, but I finally gave up and just bought a new laptop.
Well, I have a junior high. My son's in junior high, so when we first started thinking about this, it was a little bit scary. But one thing we found was that, Springfield Middle School, just a little background on Springfield Middle School, it's a title school, and that was part of the reason we were able to do this, is we were able to use some of our title funds. These kids look at the computers, and, I mean, it's, in a lot of cases, it's the only computer they're going to be working with, and especially they have the privilege of taking it home. So I think in a lot of these schools, they look at it and say, wow, this is really a neat thing. I'm going to take care of my computer. So my first thought was, wow, middle school kids, I know my own kids, what's going to happen to this machine? We've actually had about, and I don't have the exact numbers, but over the course of, this is our third year, we've probably had six machines, probably four machines stolen. And that was, one was stolen off a city bus, one was stolen out of the school, we think. One was a car was broken into and stolen. So that loss has been pretty minimal. We've had about 16 machines that were broken seriously enough that they had to be replaced. And we've been able to go through an insurance carrier. So, and the parents and students share in the deductible for that. So it's really done a lot better than we think. We've had a little breakage, minor breakage. Main thing is like keys keep falling. You know, they're prying keys off. They're opening things up, taking the airport cards out and so forth, not getting them back in, right? But really our damage has been pretty minimal, and we've been able to cover that through insurance where we have had major loss or damage. So kids have been very respectful of the computers.
Mm-hmm.
And the system's pretty bulletproof. It's really tough to disrupt. It's really done that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, implemented a number of security items on the machine so that their kids can't go out and bring in programs that may contain viruses and those sorts of things. So we've had to do a lot of monitoring there to make sure that the computers are functional.
And you have to leave it up to the parents to watch their internet surfing when they're at home with their computer, correct?
We do. In fact, we went through a pretty major process and worked with our legal counsel on developing a contract with the parents and the students.
Huh?
And at the start of the year, we bring a pretty exciting piece. But the first year we did this, a lower SES school, not a lot of parent involvement. We had 100% of the parents in the building to come in and listen to a one-hour orientation, sign the contract, understand the rules of how their kids could use the computers, and the families use the computers as well to a limited extent. So we have a pretty extensive piece about parent supervision, and the parents can request that we help them go through the computer to see what's actually on it, and in case that, you know, they suspect that their kids are doing that. And we've had that happen. Parents come in and say, you know, they're on the internet, I'm not sure what they're doing, can you help me figure that out and work with parents?
What do? You give them a computer, but what if, I mean, they're Title I families, they're very low income. What do you do if they're not hooked up to the internet at their home?
Well, you know, via the
there's not a citywide wireless network, which someday there might be, but
there's not in Springfield. And so what we're able to do is actually initially we made some arrangements with we can't put internet service in the homes because of we have to have filtered internet access. The school district can be applicable or eligible for E-rate funds. So really, we've cut a deal with a couple of the local companies to provide low rate or low cost internet access for the students if they opt to use that.
Okay.
So not all the students have that, but really a lot of them have access to some dial-in services.
But the purpose of the computer to take home, though, is to do homework, and you don't necessarily always have to be on the internet.
Exactly right. We have access to word processing. We have spreadsheets. We have all kinds of tools that they can use to, mm-hmm. you know, work on writing and so forth.
Madam Chair, it was not unusual. I don't know if it still is to see these students early in the mornings after school weekends sitting outside the school with their laptops accessing the internet because they couldn't access it at home, but that was a place where they could get the internet. Howard Elementary worked, I think, with Tom in developing their program, and theirs isn't a 24/7 program. Theirs, I think, they send them home with homework-specific assignments, maybe once or twice a week. With the younger kids, they're downloading stories and information onto iPods and sending them home for the kids to listen to. So there's all sorts of really innovative things going on in the state with technology, and I really think we need to harness it and start sending it out and having it duplicated.
It's amazing where our technology has taken us. Some of us are old enough to remember when we didn't even have regular calculators in class.
Slide rule.
Slide rules. Well, I'm not that old, but I do remember we didn't have calculators. I took business machines in my sophomore year in high school and learned the 10 key and all that stuff. Any questions down here, over here? Thank you all for coming up.
Thank you,
Representative Beyer, for coming across the building. And very good to see you. Hope you had a nice trip, Mr. Keene.
Yeah, I got my notice of the meeting when I was in Shanghai. So.
Good. All right. Well, we have two other folks to testify. Morgan Allen with the Department of Ed and Ed Wright from Senator Morse's office. Why don't you guys come up at the same time so we can get moving here?
Thank you, Chair Walker, members of the committee. For the record, Morgan mm-hmm. Allen, Department of Education. I'll make it very brief. I was the drafter of the Dash 1 amendment, so would be happy to answer any questions about it. The intent is to help lower the fiscal on it, because unlike some other task forces, this one is probably unlikely to receive funding this session, And then I also have some folks from our department that will be working on the task force if the committee has any questions about what we might be doing. So.
Okay. Mr. Allen, the there is not really essentially a fiscal on the bill. It just says that the fiscal, it's basically, although the impact of this measure would not require ODE to hire additional staff, the Legislative Fiscal Office notes that other bills are pending before this Legislative Assembly that also would require an expenditure of ODE staff time. The cumulative effect of multiple enactments cannot be determined at this time. So there's not really a fiscal per se, but if we can keep that cost down, that'd be great.
That would be helpful, and we would appreciate that. And yeah. I also did speak to Representative Beyer, obviously, before drafting the amendment, and she is aware of it and was okay with it.
Okay, so. And my intent with the other bill we're going to hear today, we don't need to send that bill to Ways and Means. Mm-hmm. I have the money allocated for it, right. And so I think we're going to be fine. Because nobody wants their bill to go to Ways and Means. Trust me, you do not want your bill to go to Ways and Means. Okay, so good to go. Mr. Wright, what have you got for us this morning?
I am old enough that I actually taught slide rules at one point in time.
Okay. Well,
Senator Walker and Chair Walker and committee, I am Ed Wright. I'm policy advisor to Senator Morris. In my previous lifetime, I taught 34 years. I got a PhD at Penn State University in 1977 in curriculum and instruction, and I was part of the design team that wrote one of the first commercial packages for teaching mathematics via the computer. And this is pre-microcomputer days. This is back on the
computer wore tennis shoes days.
Back in the very beginning.
Okay.
And the thesis for this development was on mastery learning strategy. And there are four aspects to mastery learning. One is you have to define the problem. Two, you have to have the resources available when students need them. Three, you have to give the students enough time on task to master. And four, you need to measure against what you defined in the first place. The initial rollout of this product was in the middle school in Pennsylvania and is a dismal failure, primarily because time was fixed and content was allowed to vary. If you're going to hold content fixed, that is, define the content prior to the teaching, then time must vary. And if you allow time to vary, then you also have to design the classrooms to allow for small groups to come together over time. You also have to redesign your schools so this can happen. And you have to redefine your instructional process and your training of your teachers to accommodate individualized learning. Our system is teacher-centered, time-fixed, groups of people coming together to learn in an environment. If you're going to introduce the laptop computer into the classroom, then you're going to fundamentally change the dynamics of that classroom. You're going to free the student to become student-centered. And your teachers then must learn how to facilitate learning when the environment and the material is available to students at all times and in all places. There are projects going on worldwide in this area. OSU is developing the open systems, the $100 laptop, which was on 60 Minutes on Sunday night, where they're delivering it to third world countries to allow students to learn. They're completely wireless and completely set up. But the infrastructure changes. And the learning environment changes. And so if we're to put together a task force statewide to introduce laptops into the computing, into the classroom system, then we must also address the environment in which these will go into so that they become an integral part of the instructional process. Not an add-on, not a supplementary piece of equipment, but an integral piece of the instruction going on. And that will change our entire system. So I would like to see this task force redirected a bit and to look at the dynamics of actually making computers a formal part of the instructional process.
Okay. Well, I don't think there's any reason why they can't explore that in the course of the discussions. Would that be true, Mr. Allen?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Well, but you need the expertise to do that, too.
Well, I'm sure they're going to find it, and I don't think you're very far
I'm retired
away. No, we don't take that for an answer anymore. All right, thank you. There's no one else signed up to testify, so I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2750 and open a work session.
Madam Chair, I'm assuming you want the
dash one.
Dash one amendment.
I do.
I move the dash one amendment, House Bill 2750.
Senator Cruz moves the dash one amendment to House Bill 2750. Any discussion about that? Okay, so order.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2750 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2750 as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any comments, discussion? Because you're kind of not enthusiastic.
Not entirely, and I've grown weary of task forces, and especially when we're dealing in subject areas that whatever department or agency we're tasking to do it should probably be doing it anyway. But having said that, I think Mr. Wright made a very valid point here. This task force, as the bill is written, is driven to determining what it's going to cost to put computers in school without really looking at the impact on the instructional system, because I think it would be huge and would be positive. Just for this task force to come back to us with numbers doesn't really address the central issue in this equation. And So, for the record, I'm saying that I'm hoping that the exploration is a lot more comprehensive, and because we got to look at how, if we're moving to a different modality in education, and this clearly could take us there, we need to be cognizant of that and moving that forward at the same time. I mean, just putting computers in kids' hands may sound like a wonderful thing, but what are we going to do with those computers, and how is that going to change the education system? It's a huge issue.
Okay, I'll offer you two choices here, and then I'll talk to Senator Morse. You can amend the bill if you wish and add some language, or we can write a letter to the Superintendent of Public Instruction, who is appointing the members of the task force, and simply express our wishes that the task force also examine this issue, which I think is probably the easier way to do it. And Representative Byer is here to address our questions, and Senator Morse has a comment before you do that.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Looking at the language of the bill, which I support, It has more of a mechanical flavor than the, you know, it's the kind of the what, it's not the why and the how. And I would draw our attention to the what we have learned from our use of instructional technology presented by the Springfield Public Schools, Al King. Teacher readiness is a critical success factor in implementation of technology, change, training, curriculum, support. And I think that's what we've heard from more than one person talking about, the use of technology. If a letter would accomplish, expression of this issue, under the clause implementation obstacles, I mean, that's a very broad piece of language.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And the interpretation that we understand that to be is that it's not just a mechanical, what's the cost and how to go out and buy computers. It's what are we going to do with them and how do we prepare the classroom and the teachers to make them most effective in the use of this technology.
Okay. Thank you. Why don't you all respond to that?
Thank you. And I would say he probably has addressed it. That was one of the lessons learned, and probably the most important thing that you can do.
Oh,
is
wait a minute!
Your
you have to tell us who you are.
Representative Terry Byer, House District 12, for the record. Sorry. But the curriculum adoption, I mean, that all had to be done early on, and it is the most important thing that they have learned in this, and would definitely was always forefront in my mind, but maybe the language hasn't been quite clear enough that it specifically says that. So,
okay. So what do you think? Do you think that the phrase implementation obstacles leaves it open enough with a letter from this committee that we could really get our concerns addressed. I really don't want to amend the bill any further, but I think Senator Morris has pointed out an opening here that we can go to. And Mr. King?
Yes, Al King, Springfield School Board. We purposely left this bill quite broad so that we could bring the best minds in the state to as broad a set of topics as possible. Superintendent Castillo had, you know, voiced some of the same concerns when I had conference with her. But when she understood that really the purpose was to be as broad as possible and bring in as many issues as our best minds could do and address it. So we really have left it open so we can go through exactly the processes that you're addressing. So I think those are good questions.
Okay. Well,
and a letter from the committee wouldn't hurt.
Yeah, I think that's fine. Are you guys all fine with
that? Yeah, Madam Chair, I am. I think everybody's in agreement here that just acquiring hardware doesn't get us where we need to be.
Right.
So, and do we just, as long as we're on the record, we make that clear and distinct, and a letter, and the department agrees with that as well. So this is not an issue. So we just need to make it clear and distinct that this is broader than narrow language. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. Mr. Wright could work on that with Dana, Ms. Richardson, and then we will run that by everyone, the interested parties, Representative Beyer, and we'll get that done. We're very good at writing letters. We've got one here we wrote to the university system that turned out very well. All right, thank you. So with that, we're still in work session. We've adopted the Dash 1.
We have a motion on the main bill.
So, and that we just need to take a vote. So, Ms. Gravel.
Senator Metzger?
Aye.
Did you make a motion? You did make a motion, yeah.
Senator Westman?
That's right. He's excused.
Vice Chair
Hughes? Aye.
Aye. House Bill 2750 is approved. It's going to the floor. Senator Cruz, since I don't know, Senator Morris,
Senator,
do you want to carry that? I think you'd be a good carrier.
Yes, I do too.
Okay, great. And you guys will get started on that letter, and that'd be terrific. Okay.
Write the letter. Right.
Discombobulated here. 2584 is next. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2584A.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2584A creates a task force on civics and financial education. It requires the task force to report back and provide legislative recommendations to the legislature's interim education committees by October 1st, 2008. It sunsets the task force upon opening of the next regular biennial legislative session. It declares an emergency. It would take effect July 1st, 2007. It currently has the subsequent referral to Ways and Means. We have a Dash A5 amendment in front of us that specifies that task force members are volunteers and would not be receive compensation or reimbursement of expenses.
And I don't think we need the Dash 1 in this one. Mr. Allen, can you come up real quick? And then I've got this credit union panel I need to have. I've got $50,000 set aside for this task force in Ways and Means.
Chair Walker, members of the committee, for the record, Morgan Allen, Department of Education. If there is $50,000 forthcoming in Ways and Means for this particular task force, we would be fine with that. I think our fiscal was right around $51,000, and we could do it for $50,000 if we get that appropriated to us.
Okay, and that reimburses people.
That included factoring in reimbursements for the 9 task force members and our staff time and other supplies that the committee might, or the task force might need.
Normally, task forces, well, sometimes they get reimbursed and sometimes they don't. This one, because we combine two subjects and they keep coming back over and over again, that's why I think the co-chairs were buying off on the investment here, because we're never going to solve this issue if people just keep coming back with the bills. So we decided we'd finally take a look at it. All right, well, thank you for that. So we won't need the Dash 1. Okay, I'm going to invite up the credit union panel. They're under a time constraint. Pam Levitt, Claudine, I can't read the last name, and Corey. I'm not going to attempt that last name. So you'll just have to tell us what that is.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Pam Levitt, representing the Credit Union Association of Oregon. It's very nice to be here before you. I spend a lot of time in Senator Metzger's business committee, but it's nice to be here before the education committee. I have to begin by thanking Senator Walker. She has been a leader on financial education for several years. This bill.
I'm one of those people that keeps bringing the bill back.
This bill is not just a task force bill to us. It's a bill really recognizing the need for financial education that we credit unions have been bringing forth before the legislature for the past three sessions. And we're excited that this bill looks like it's going to pass this session. I provided you some written testimony from all of us, and I have some experts who really live and work in the area of financial education. I want to have them really spend most of the time talking. Just want to recognize that our children are saying to us, are the kids when they're graduating, you know, we're not getting financial education. We're not getting that. I included an article by Julie Tripp, and just want to read you a section. It says, her article says, a half-year personal finance is no longer required to graduate in Oregon, but what educators call content standard is still on the books. To earn a diploma, students should demonstrate the knowledge and skills necessary to make reasoned and responsible financial decisions as a consumer, producer, saver, and investor in a market economy. School districts are supposed to assure that classes contain content to meet those standards. I can tell you that our credit unions who spend time out in the schools are saying that it's just not happening. We're not getting out there to our students. And just provided you with some statistics, some studies that have been done. We use a program called National Endowment for Financial Education. And I'm going to share with you kind of the model curriculum that credit unions are out there teaching in Oregon schools. I'll give this. We believe this is an important issue, and we urge your support of House Bill 2584, and I'll turn it over to our panel.
Good morning. My name is Claudine Oriani, Madam Chair, Chair, and members of the Senate Committee. I want to thank you for your commitment to Oregon's education. I'm the Director of Community Education with OSU Federal, and it is my pleasure daily to reach out and work with youth populations as well as adult populations. You know, as you were reminiscing earlier about back in the day when you were in school, what came to mind for me is what I needed when I graduated high school in 1978, as far as personal finance literacy, is very different than what today's teen will need in order to survive the financial waters that they are dealing with. Back in the day when I was their age, there was no electronic funds transfer. There was no bill payment online. There is no internet access to banking. We didn't have the fraud issues. We didn't have the identity theft issues. Mm-hmm. And so it is so necessary that we provide the education for these young people to succeed in a very complex world. This, of course, forming the committee would help us look at the issues. Right now, when I am successful in getting into schools, it may take repeated messaging before administrators and teachers are willing to allow us to come in, because quite frankly, they're afraid that we're there to sell rather than tell. And clearly, that is not the mission of credit unions in Oregon. When I am able to get a foot in the door, it is typically at during a classroom time that is economics or accounting or some kind of business course, and it is an elective course. I then find that I'm preaching to the choir. These young people who have self-selected in these types of electives actually have positive money management skills being modeled at home. Those, however, who are most likely to fall predatory or predatory victims to predatory lending and identity theft are the last ones to select those classes. And so by forming the committee and taking a look at it, what my hope would be is that Oregon schools are able to provide financial literacy support to every single student graduating high school so that they're positioned to succeed at managing their financial affairs without being preyed upon by spray and pray credit card campaigns on college campuses and, again, identity theft. Most people don't realize that those most likely to be victimized are between the ages of 18 and 29. So I welcome any questions you may have.
Madam Chair, she graduated in 78. That means she's really young.
Relatively speaking.
She probably didn't learn a slide rule. So.
Yeah, that's the year I graduated college. So she's 4 years younger than me.
And you're really young, too, by the way.
We're all very, very young.
Yeah, just keep telling ourselves that. That's a good thing. Okay, great. And now, Corey, we're going to learn how your last name is pronounced.
Thank you, Chair Walker and members of the Senate Committee on Education. My name is Corey Frondiner.
Frondiner.
Yeah. I know it doesn't look like that, but we've anglicized it so it's easier to speak.
Boy, as a child, you must have had a rough time learning how to spell that.
I did really good. I had, I could copy it. But my son, by the way, this is some education, by the time he was 2, could spell our last name because he heard me spell it any time I was on the phone or asked on the phone when he said, yes, I'll spell it for you. And he started spelling it right in front of me. And
I thought, that's so
sweet. Did I really hear that? Mm-hmm. And by golly, I got off the phone and said, honey, can you spell our last name? Mm-hmm. Would you do it? Mm-hmm. And he did. So rote learning does have its place, I guess, in education because it does work.
Oh, that's a sweet story. Thanks for sharing.
Well, I do thank you all for having this opportunity to come and support a task force that will look at a way to get universal education to students and adults in our community and in our country. What Pam and Claudine have told you, I support 2,000%. I'm out there in the community because my role is as education, Director of Education Partnerships for MAPS Credit Union here in Salem. And that puts me in the school system daily at a variety of levels. And I guess I could say I have a catbird seat for this, and that can be a good thing and a bad thing. Let me share what I mean with that. In 1995, we opened our first education branch here in the school system in 24J at North Salem High School. Now, this was done in response to the SIM and CAM requirements at that time that were just initiated and are now being looked at in a different manner. But that was a new mandate. We wanted to be supportive of our school system in two ways. The CAM requirement was what the actual branch was. This gave students an opportunity in the business and management class to learn skills that they would take into the workplace. They ran the branch. It's a live branch. And they were doing exactly what they would do if they worked in one of our regular branches.
Yeah.
The SIM component came into play because at that time, sophomore econ was mandated. And this gave students in the school an opportunity to practice what they were learning in the classroom and help them become better consumers. Well, over the years, we've opened 2 more high school branches, one at McKay and one at West Salem High School. So we've had a lot of changes come into the program. We've added things. We've met the challenge of electronic banking, of helping them understand the use of a debit card, the pitfalls of using a credit card, though each one of them want to have one. But we've also seen a different twist that isn't so positive, and that is that the education component in sophomore econ is no longer mandated. And so what happens is there are schools that do have some type of money management training. The problem is how it's done, where it's taught, and what's in the content of the curriculum. It's not uniform. I'm able to hear and talk to students all over the schools and at different conferences that we attend. And I will ask them, are you getting education in money management? Some do. What are you learning? Usually it's about investments, money management for skills without the basic foundation. We need to give them ideas of how to handle checking accounts, the benefits of savings, how to handle credit, when to have it, so that they don't fall into the traps of bankruptcy, predatory lending, check cashing stores, and the awful credit card debt that we have in the United States. One of the challenges was met by some of our class students who have written curriculum for students in the elementary and middle school level. They have crafted curriculum where they go into the schools and they teach it, and they help students understand at a very young age how important this is. We are greeted with great anticipation for that. The students love to do the teaching. The teachers love to have younger students come in and talk to their grade school age kids. And the young kids, they do a Tootsie Roll program where their money is Tootsie Roll. And if they eat their Tootsie Rolls right away, they don't have any savings. But if they hold on to them, they get a bonus at the end of more of something else that's even better, a little gold coins in a little bag. And this helps them understand that by just saving a little bit, they can come out on the other end very well. by having this enthusiasm, we see that if we start educating at a much younger age, then we can help get our students to have a lifelong learning so that they come out after going through elementary and middle school. When they graduate from high school, hopefully they're going to come out with some skills that when they get a job, they'll know how to handle the money they have. Now, we know there's no easy answers to this need. We really want to all work together for a solution. What we hope is that this task force will have a conversation that the result is a cohesive, comprehensive, collaborative curriculum and a delivery to system that is supported by educators, administrators, legislators, the Department of Ed, business people, and parents. It would be nice if the students were asked a little bit too and like the courses that we give them. They'll be much better learners. It needs to be in a well-structured process that is implemented throughout the state by those in charge of organizing the curriculum so that it is ensured that there will be uniformity and that these students coming out on the other end will be financially literate. And I thank you for your time and your support. We do know that this committee is very supportive of this education process, and we thank you very much for that.
Thank you. I appreciate your testimony and your diligence to make sure we can finally get somewhere. And I know the credit unions have been real active. We did have some information last session. The banks have also been doing something, and so have my bankruptcy judges and members of the bankruptcy bar in Lane County. They've been going to all the high schools, as many as they can. The judge just really likes doing it. Because we see these kids in bankruptcy court, and it's really sad. You know, you can understand a person my age maybe getting into financial trouble, but when you see young children, like 18, 19, 20-year-olds in bankruptcy court, there's a problem here. So, and they're early, they get early sidetracked into buying too much stuff and not realizing they can't pay for it.
Madam Chair, Pam Lovett, you hit it on the nail. There are many wonderful groups out there really getting involved in this area of financial education. And, you know, these guys are our leaders in the state. All of our credit unions are out there. But our frustration is that it is such a life skill and it's not being, you know, taught to all of our students. And we see the bankruptcies that come to the credit unions. We see people who have been preyed on by other kinds of lending operations, and you know, we really want to get into our students, so that's why we've been pushing for so many years.
You know, the collection agencies also want to see this. I spoke to the Collectors Association a year or so ago, and I said, well, now I know it'll take business away from you if we don't have people come to you for money, and they're like, no, we don't want these people to come to us. Yeah. We want them to succeed. And I thought that was pretty cool. So they're as interested in financial education as you all are. Senator Morse, and then I think Senator Metzger, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would gather from the testimony that instruction is a little bit hit and miss within our schools. And, Madam Chair, I would suggest that there's an opportunity for financial institutions in the state, even more than the outreach that you're currently doing, to develop standardized curriculum in conjunction with the Department of Education, so we have a consistency across the state of Oregon. And that might be a part of your extension of civics and financial offerings to the state of Oregon.
Senator Morse, that's been the problem here, is the department would always come back and say, well, we don't have standardized curriculum. So we were in a catch-22 constantly. So that's why I get tired of task forces too, but I think this one, combining those two issues, get funding for it, and I think you're right.
Madam Chair,
we've got a lot to offer.
That is our exact bill that we've had for the last several sessions, is there is standard curriculum developed by many different organizations. We shared one with you, and we do believe that standard curriculum is the way to go, but we have learned that that is not something supported, and so we are happy to go with this task force route.
Senator Metzger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think on those same topics, and Ms. Leavitt has articulated it well, it has been a very frustrating element, because you've got financial institutions, not just credit unions, banks, and others, who have materials and have the money and have offered to provide this universally. And our Department of Education always has an excuse of why we can't have people volunteer to provide the resources for this. And, you know, I had the pleasure of speaking to the Michigan Credit Union League almost a year ago. And they passed a law requiring financial education. And I said, we're going to do it here real soon. And this task force, I will say, is really important in coming up with a recommendation because, you know, I fully intend to make this a priority in the next session that we are going to pass something into law. So just put everybody on notice. This will be a Metzger priority along with you and some others. This is going to happen. So I really want the task force to do good work. You know, it's amazing. I read in the Wall Street Journal in February that the nation now has a negative savings rate for the first time since the Depression.
Right.
Since the Depression. I mean, people save less. I mean, they spend more than they earn. And, you know, I mean, the clouds are all over the sky of what's going to happen. And in the legislature, you know, we have such a disconnect, and all of our three guests here have pointed this out. You know, we spend a lot of time, a lot of effort in producing legislation to rein in payday lenders, you know, unscrupulous finance companies. We have, you know, things that we're talking about now, going out of business, you know, operations. Senate Bill 965 to deal with subprime lenders and mortgages, and, you know, who are trying to trick consumers. And we spend all this energy, how it's so important, but we send the people out at the age of 19 without any understanding of why those people are able to prey upon them. Mm-hmm. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. If the young people, as they become adults in our state, knew what was being thrust upon them, we wouldn't have to spend as much time and resource trying to insulate them and educate them at the age of 30 when we could be doing this, you know, in grade school, middle school, and high school. So. You know, this is really, really important. It's a core ingredient. I think skillfully done, it can be integrated into the core curriculum. It's really interesting stuff. Kids really get interested in it. I think it was pointed out that the credit unions, there's a number of, I think there may be some in your area, Senator Walker, where they have actually in-branch credit unions teaching people how to manage money and lend money and save money. And not only is it an important life skill, but we spend so much time in the legislature dealing with the after effects of failing to do this that if we did it, then people wouldn't find such fertile ground, I think, in the state of Oregon, and a consumer that, you know, needs this type of assistance. So, yeah, I hate task forces too, but this one's going to produce something. I'm very excited about that, and we're going to make an effort then to make sure that this becomes part of our curriculum as a result of the old nine session.
Okay, cool. I think we're all there.
Chair Walker, I just wanted to say that the Department of Education was wonderful to work with, and Morgan was very helpful on this bill. I just wanted to put that on the record.
All right. Thank you, ladies. We have, we're running behind, so I'm not going to take much more time on this bill. We've got Bob Wilner. Would you come up, please? And then, Morgan, I need you to come up and speak to the civics piece or somebody. Give me 2 minutes on the civics piece. No one's talked about that yet. Mr. Wilner, go ahead.
Bob Wilner, Oregon International Council and Gadfly to Oregon Education for the last 25 years. I'm here to express my concern that this bill, although it's intrinsically a good idea, accentuates a problem while it tries to solve one. I think the fundamental issue here is that, well, I would put it this way. I was present about 10, 12 years ago when the social studies was redefined as history, geography, civics, and economics. And there were some complicated political reasons for that redefinition. But I think we need to understand it was a redefinition, not a dissection. History, geography, civics, and economics, I think, were perceived as a whole, what used to be the social studies. And I think all of those skills and forms of knowledge are crucial to the future of citizens. So I am uneasy about a task force that focuses on just one of these elements. There is a problem, obviously, of students not knowing where they are in the world of money.
But I think the problem is even greater. They don't know where they are in the world of human beings either. Where are we, how did we get here, and what do we do about it is the basic issue for social studies. And money is part of it. But it goes much broader than that. And I would also suggest that if the lenders are concerned about the abilities and knowledge of their borrowers, don't they have a responsibility also for determining the creditworthiness of their customers, in addition to loading it on the public schools? With which in mind, I would like to suggest that this task force adopt a broader scope and focus on the social sciences, the social studies as a whole, not just separate out the financial part of it. Because without a knowledge, without an understanding of how society works as a whole, this knowledge of the intricacies of finance isn't going to have much real value. So I urge this committee to consider a much broader scope for this task force than just the financial problems of the lenders.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. Wilner. This committee, this task force is also on civics education, which I think can encompass what you're discussing. So very quickly, gentlemen, I need to get done with this bill by 9:30.
For the record, Morgan Allen, Department of Education, and Pat Burke will do the heavy lifting for me. But I think generally what I like to think when I look at the bill and I see the word civics, there's a word missing there, but it's sort of unspoken, and that's the word engagement. And I think this task force needs to look at things, and we could definitely look at this, you know. You heard from the financial folks that, you know, kids are coming out of school maybe having trouble understanding how to open a checking account or balance their checkbook, but we also have kids, low numbers of students registering to vote, becoming active in civic organizations, clubs, volunteerism, and things like that. And I think that's, in my mind, that word is sort of missing from the task force, but it's sort of implicit that that's part of maybe what this should look at. So, and I'll let Pat Burke.
Okay.
I don't have a lifting here. Chair Walker, members of the committee, I'm Pat Burke. I'm a policy officer at the department. Civics lies within, as Mr. Wilner said, within the social sciences. The state has established standards in civics, history, geography, and economics, and reviews textbook materials and curriculum materials and makes those materials and decisions available to school districts for local school district adoption. It is a requirement that government be part of that and civics be a part of that. As some of you may be aware, there is a national initiative on civics education. Oregon has been a participant in that initiative. Several members of the Oregon legislature over the past 3 years have been to conferences in Washington, D.C. on state initiatives to improve civics education. So the task force would give us an opportunity to take that some of that information and apply it to recommendations for the legislature. I do agree with what Mr. Allen said. One of the key elements that states around the United States are focusing on is not so much knowledge of government, the basic structure of government, although that can be improved. But also, as you are probably aware, that demographic of 18 to 24 having very low voter participation, very low engagement in civic activities. And the focus, our interest is not only the teaching of civics and government, but also the creating of an active young citizenry leaving high school ready to take their place in society. So for that reason, Madam Chair, we are supportive of the task force. Look forward to working with it.
Great. Thank you. Any questions from the committee? All right. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, Mr. Wilner. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2584A and open a work session.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2584A to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation and the subsequent referral to Ways and Means be rescinded.
Thank you. Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2584A be sent to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation and a subsequent referral to Ways and Means be rescinded. And I will open the discussion on that by saying we've got money down there, but we don't need to send the bill. The co-chair has money appropriated for one of his priorities, and he didn't need the bill, so I think there's precedence here to do it that way. Not that there's anything wrong with what the co-chair is saying, that we can do it. And I don't want to get this bill hung up anymore, but I can tell you all that if we had voted on the K through 12 grant and aid budget yesterday, it would have been in there, but we got hung up. So, but this piece will be in there. So, any other questions? Okay, take the roll, Ms. Gravel.
Aye.
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 Aye. House Bill 2584A is approved.
You're going to carry it.
And I'm going to carry it. Okay. And you can all chime in if you wish. Okay, let's get cracking. We're going till 10:15. 3120, I will open a public hearing on House Bill 3120A, which is a fun little bill. Ms. Richardson.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3120A requires delivery of a completed marriage application license and record to the Center for Health Statistics. Requires persons solemnizing marriage to deliver the marriage license application, license and record of marriage to the issuing county clerk within 10 days after the marriage ceremony. Deletes the statutory specifications for marriage certificates and authorizes the county clerks to design and issue commemorative marriage certificates. You have two amendments in front of you. The dash A2s permit either party entering a marriage to retain the surname, change the surname to the surname of the other party, or hyphenate a combination of the surnames. The dash A3s are conflict amendments if you all like the dash A2s.
Cool. Okay, we've got, that's my word, operative word today. Cool. Three people, Jennifer Woodward, James Morales, and Allison De La Torre from my office. If you'll all three come up, we'll get it done. I'm behind the...
Can I correct myself,
two.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
The conflict amendments aren't for the amendments, they're for the bill.
Oh, whether we draft the amendment or not.
Exactly.
Okay, thank you. Okay. Who would like to go first? Allison, you can go last because you're doing the amendments. So, Jennifer, James, which one? Who brought the bill forward?
The clerks.
Okay, then the clerks can go first. Okay.
Senator Walker, members of the committee, James Morales, Benton County Clerk, on behalf of the Oregon Association of County Clerks.
Okay. And?
House Bill 3120 was brought to the legislature by the county clerks for the purpose of cleaning up the marriage statutes. We had some conflicts between other portions of the statute, that being the 10 days versus 30 days of the return of the completed marriage license and application record of marriage to the county clerks. So we're asking to clean that portion up. We're also clarifying in the language when we are talking about the application license and record of marriage. We're making that clear because there was some portions where it was being referred to as a certificate, which was a commemorative piece or document that we were also issuing. And so we just wanted to clean this language up, make it more understandable so anybody reading the statutes would be able to follow the process a little more clearly. And we think that this bill does that, so we think it's a good bill. We worked in conjunction with Jennifer Woodward and a committee at the State Vital Records, Vital Statistics.
Great people
office.
To work with, aren't they?
Yes, yes, they are. And so, really, I had previously submitted some written testimony. I believe that the committee probably has it on their packet. I'm hoping that you do. If not, I'll be happy to provide additional documentation if needed.
That would be great because we don't always get that when the bills come over. We don't get it at all, actually. So if you could do that, because if we pass this bill today, I'm going to carry it, and I need to know a little bit more information. Have you reviewed the amendment? Do you object to the amendment?
I have reviewed the amendments, and we do not have, the county clerks don't have a problem with the amendments. As long as the committee is good with the amendments, we're fine with it. The only thing is it is a cleanup bill where it does slow down the process a little bit of getting the bill, our cleanup bill, into law, but we know that the conflict amendments for sure are needed,
mm-hmm.
With 2007 having been passed already. That, I'll leave it to the committee to decide on the amendment.
Great. I'll have Ms. De La Torre then introduce the amendment, and then I'll have Ms. Woodward speak to them.
Good morning, Chair Walker, members of the committee. I'm Allison De La Torre, legislative assistant to Senator Walker. And every once in a while in our office, we run across a problem in the statutes, and we think, I can't believe it's not clear already. And we had no idea that the process right now for a name change upon marriage is an unequal process for a man or a woman. If you look at the current application license and record of marriage that you have in front of you, looks like this. You'll see that the form does not clearly indicate what each spouse's name will be after marriage. Senator Walker's amendment would require a place on the Oregon application license and record of marriage for either spouse to change their name. This document is the legal record of a name change upon marriage. Currently, a wife choosing to take her husband's surname will use this form as she goes about the process of changing her name on identification and other vital records. And the lack of clarity in the statute and on the form poses a challenge for males who choose to take their wife's surname or couples who choose to take a hyphenated combination of the two. And in fact, a man in California, along with the ACLU, are currently suing the state of California over this issue, and we don't want Oregon to be left open to this kind of a legal challenge. Currently, six states, the states are on my written testimony. They explicitly allow a man to change his name through marriage with the same ease as a woman can. And I urge you to adopt the amendments before you to bring Oregon into the 21st century.
Yeah.
Women are not property, and married names should be a matter of choice. Senator Walker had introduced these amendments to make the process more equitable and more clear. Similar legislation is in the works in California as a result of a lawsuit. Jennifer Woodward, the state registrar, is here to explain the technical aspects of this amendment. It's a common sense fix for a modern world.
Thank you. Ms. Woodward.
Thank you. Chair Walker and members of the committee, I'm Jennifer Woodward from the Public Health Division of the Department of Human Services. I'm the state registrar for vital records, and you do have written testimony. I've been invited today to just talk a little bit about the proposed A2 amendments with regards to changing the surname. The goal of the amendment is to allow married persons, regardless of gender, to change the surname upon marriage. As Allison just mentioned, currently a man who would like to take the surname of his wife or take a hyphenated surname would have to get a court judgment of name change to do so. What the amendment does is it adds a legal name after marriage for both the bride and the groom to the application license and record of marriage. And DHS supports the addition of this item because what it does is it allows a name change that occurs upon marriage to be documented appropriately. Currently, there's nothing on the marriage record that shows what name you're going to be taking upon marriage for a bride or for a groom. The amendment also modifies ORS 106.220, which allows a bride or a groom or both to specify their current legal name upon marriage without the approval of the court. The amendment specifies that a surname may be changed to the surname of the other party or to a hyphenated combination of surnames for both spouses. And the amendment also takes into account that because it is common for women to use their birth surname to become their middle name after marriage, the amendment allows that option as well. Also, the amendment, I'd like to recommend removing the requirements that the department write administrative rules prescribing the form of the application and license of record of marriage. This will allow the state registrar to make any changes to the form without going through the rulemaking process. For example, since I've worked in the Department of Human Services, we have been the Department of Human Resources, the Department of Human Services, the Public Health Division, the Oregon Health Division, and any time I needed to change a vital record form, the marriage form, I would need to go through rulemaking to do that just for the marriage record. No other vital records have the rulemaking change in that. So the amendments, I have no fiscal impact on the Department of Human Services, and I would be happy to answer any questions, and I greatly appreciate the opportunity to testify and to be involved in helping this process.
Thank you, Ms. Woodward. You have been extremely helpful.
Thank you.
To our office as we worked on these amendments, and the things that you wanted are in the dash too, allowing you to provide rather than prescribe. So I'm this is like women's lib of the 21st century. I just love it. And it's male lib too, because
yeah,
it allows
you. What are you talking
about? It allows you, if you, you know, we're already married, but it allows new men getting married to take their wife's surname. I think this is so cool.
Well, I think it's interesting, Madam Chair, that as Ms. Woodward pointed out, her agency has had more problems changing their surname than Mickey Rooney has. And so probably we should have a form for agencies where they can take the name of whatever has been dictated to them so they can be also appropriately have all their names recorded in history.
Well, thank you, Senator. I'm just kind of stoked about this little bill. You know, this issue came to my attention, and so I asked my staff to look for a relating clause, and lo and behold, there was a bill on its way over from the House. So we immediately started working with Ms. Woodward, and she said they needed some amendments anyway, so we just tagged along, and I think this is fun.
Cool.
Any questions, Senator Morris? It's not like when we got married.
You got married? Hold on now. What did this
happen? You've been married 34 years, Senator Metzger. I mean, you just took the name of your husband, and that was it. Yeah, my husband would be surprised that we're married, but I get you. That's what happens with those dangling modifiers. Okay, any questions from the committee? And I see no one else signed to testify, so thank you, all three of you. We're very happy. We close the public hearing on House Bill 3120A, open a work session.
Okay, Madam Chair, I'll
move the twos and the threes.
Yeah, I'll move the dash A2 amendment, House Bill 3120.
Be so excited about it. Senator Cruz moves the dash 2 amendment to House Bill 3120A. Any objection? So ordered.
Madam Chair, I move the dash A3 amendment to House Bill 3120.
Senator Cruz moves the dash A3 amendment to House Bill 3120. Any conversation about that? So ordered.
I'm sure.
Let me hear why you're so.
Yeah, you will. but after I make the motion.
Uh-huh.
So. I'm sure I move House Bill 3120A as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Okay. Senator Cruz moves House Bill 3120A as amended to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation, and I know he wants to speak to that motion.
Well, just a question. I'm looking at the conflict resolutions. If indeed Senate or House Bill 2007, if indeed a domestic partnership is not the same as marriage, I'm wondering why we have to modify the marriage statute because of it.
Because in House Bill 2007, it says they can have a marriage certificate, or not a marriage certificate, but a certificate. Right here.
Madam Chair, I know what it says.
Okay.
That was, I just tore up in the statement.
Okay.
It actually wasn't a question.
Okay.
So.
All right. Yes, Senator Morris.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A question. I see the recommendation from DHS is that they recommend removing the requirement that the Department of Right administrative rules. Is that included in these amendments?
It's in the dash 2.
The dash 2. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yes. And the dash 3s are necessary as House Bill 2007 becomes law, which it is.
Yes, I understand
at
that.
The point, at this moment. So, okay. Any other questions? All right. Let's call the roll, Ms. Gravel.
Senator Metzger? Aye.
Senator Moore?
Aye.
Senator Westland?
Aye.
Vice Chair Cruz?
No.
Chair Walker?
Aye. House Bill 3120A passes, and I will carry that. Okay. Thank you very much. All right, let's move right along. as 2026-06, open a public hearing on House Bill 2606. We'll see how quickly we can get this done.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2606A modifies certain educational class requirements from years to credits. It directs school districts to award a high school diploma to a student who has fulfilled graduation requirements in less than 4 years, or advance a student to the next grade level if the student meets the credit requirements upon student request and with the consent of the student's parents or guardians. Declares an emergency and will take effect July 1st, 2007.
Okay, Ms. Phillips. Shouldn't take very long here because we're running behind. And we like the bill.
Good. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Don Phillips, Chief of Staff for State Representative Jerry Crummell, who, by the way, is a high school social studies teacher and would have loved to have been here today to talk about your civics bill as well. But he's out of town and will be back shortly to come over and congratulate all of you for passing this bill. This is a great time of year.
Don't threaten us like that.
Yeah.
Didn't you see the last weekly Democrat? The not-so-weekly Democrat?
I'm a no, Madam Chair. I understand this. Get two more.
I'll yield to your wisdom.
Okay.
But this is a great time of year to talk about this bill because you have thousands of Oregon students getting ready to graduate high school in the next couple of weeks. I won't go through all the ins and outs of the bill. Your committee administrators outlined it very well. But a couple of the things that we should point out is we talk a lot about, you know, how far kids are falling behind in school, and very rarely do we talk about celebrating the success stories and the students who are succeeding and those that want to move at their own pace and move a little bit ahead, perhaps. For example, in House Bill 2606, a high school student could work on freshman math and advance to sophomore math while they're still in their freshman year of high school, so it allows that flexibility. 2606 is what we see as the next kind of logical step in where the state is going. For example, last year the legislature increased the number of credits that high school students need in order to graduate, and that'll take effect in the year 2010. The State Board of Education followed that by increasing the number of credits to increase the number of requirements to graduate starting in the year 2014. So now we're up to 24 credits. We've also had the expanded options program from last session to allow kids to kind of explore college courses a little more rigorously. And you've also seen a 16% increase in participation in the number of advanced placement exams and classes. So there is a large segment of the student population out there that is ready to advance, and this bill allows them to do that. House Bill 2606 might even reduce the dropout rate. How many times have we heard of dropout studies when they interview the students and they say, well, the classes were just kind of irrelevant. I didn't feel challenged. Maybe this is a good way to let some of those students who are ready to drop out take that alternative and graduate early if they're ready. In other states, according to NCSL, students can graduate early if they've reached all the required courses. Some of them do summer school. Some do online courses, independent study, or get their credits through proficiency. In fact, in Florida, they have an optional 18-unit diploma that's an option to their 24-unit standard diploma. And in order to get that option, they have to take a lot of advanced courses and have a very high GPA. So a lot of states are looking at this accelerated diploma. Just some anecdotal information. In the House testimony, we heard from one of your former colleagues' daughters, Courtney Miller, former Senator Representative Randy Miller's daughter, who graduated at 16 from Westland High School. And she's now in the Honors College getting ready to graduate a year earlier at Arizona State in kinesiology, I think is what she called it. She wants to be a registered dietitian, and she'll graduate in December after only 3 years there. Let me give you just a slice of her testimony to give you kind of a flavor of what we heard from some of the students on the House side.
And then I'll wrap
her up. And we'll wrap her up for you. She said there are only a select few students who will find early graduation to be on the right path for them to follow. However, it should be their choice to pursue their dream. I will tell you the one difference between the current system and this bill is that under the current system, a lot of students have to jump through many, many hoops, like Courtney did. She had to go to her high school counselor, her principal, her school board, her school superintendent, and then her school board. So there's a lot of different levels that you have to go through now in the system, and we're hoping that this will streamline it for the students who are ready to move on. It did pass the House 50-7, and we're hoping to get it past the Senate even
meeting unanimously if you're up for it.
Okay.
And that's it this morning.
Thank you. Can you tell me why those folks were opposed to the bill? Was there a floor debate in opposition?
There really wasn't a floor debate in opposition. I think the only question was whether there have been a lot of students held back on purpose by high schools. And, you know, we've just heard that no one's actually been held back and made to stay there the full 4 years. There were just some students who were frustrated that they had to go through so many layers to graduate early.
Okay.
So I can't speak to the seven no votes.
You're looking at someone who graduated a half year early. My daughter graduated a half year early. It was easy in my school in Reedsport. They accommodated me, and Sheldon High School in Eugene accommodated
right.
me. But I'm not sure all high schools do, so that's why I think you're looking at this committee
let's do it.
Liking this bill.
Madam
at least
Chair.
We are. I don't know about Senator Metzger.
I think they let you out a half a year early to get you out of their hair. I think they learned early what everyone else who comes to your committee learns. That let her go! Let her go!
Well, I did ask a lot of questions and question authority in class.
You?
But I got great grades. I was in the Honor Society. Come on. All right. Thank you, Ms. Phillips. We'll close the public hearing. Open a work session.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2606A to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2606A to the floor of the Senate with a due pass recommendation. Any further discussion of consequence? Okay, then let's take the roll.
Aye.
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 Aye. House Bill 2606A passes, and Senator Westland, you're carrying that. So I hope you were paying attention.
It took me 5 years to get out of high school, Madam Chair.
Well, then you're a case study of why we need to make it easier to get you out of there. Okay. I'm opening. I'm opening a work session on House Bill 2263A. We already had one. So we're going to open it. Whoever needs to testify, come forward. I see everyone's left in the room. I want 3, 3, 3. So give me the first three. Just take your pick. And I'm going to have Ms. Richardson talk about it while you come up. All right.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is a bill that we heard prior. The main bill abolishes the STEM and the CAM and makes some other modifications to ongoing programs. It declares an emergency and take effect July 1st, 2007. There are what I would term to be kind of three different types of amendments before you. Some are put forward by the Oregon Department of Education. Those add elements to local district continuous improvement plans, requires the superintendent of public instruction to assign school ratings, requires schools rated as in need of improvement to file school improvement plans, requires the Department of Education to work with stakeholders to design and implement system of progressive interventions for school districts that do not demonstrate improvement, that changes the elements of the Oregon report card. That is what you'll see in your A5s and your A9s. Your A9s are just a tiny bit better than your A5s because they have a one-word fix, and they list two statutes that were amended by A5 that were inadvertently not listed.
I think Mr. Green is the cause of the A9?
No.
But
that's just a thing, and that happened.
Okay, so
that's one type. You got your A9s, really, and those are the Department of Education.
Okay, so let's just get rid of the A5s.
A5s is on.
Cross out the A5s, guys.
Okay. Let's do the A7s, brought forward by the Oregon State,
Oregon
thank
School
you,
Board.
OSBA.
There's
something S, something B. The A7s allow school districts to prepare budgets annually or biennially.
And I'm curious about that one, so that's good.
And then you have the A8s that Representative Comp spoke to earlier, and this has to do with providing and administering a nationally normed assessment to all grade 10 students. And so those are your types of amendments and your numbers.
They're pretty big. So tell me about the four again. Do we need to look at the four? So the fours are gone.
Those are
the fives are gone.
Previous iteration of Oregon Department of Education, same as A5s,
okay.
Previous generation.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
And the sixes are whose?
Those are marquee related.
Okay, but didn't those get superseded by the eights?
They have different elements, and that Representative Comp at least supported the A8s.
Okay, and are the marquees in here?
suspect they're in the hallway.
Well, Madam Chair.
Okay, and then the A9 is a
Department of Education getting you all the way there, if that's what the committee wants to do.
Okay.
And Madam Chair, when Representative Comp spoke to the fives, I talked to her afterwards, and she actually meant to be referencing the nines.
Okay, great. So the nines supersede the fives. Okay, so if we adopt amendments, we'd probably adopt 7, 8, and 9, I think. Okay.
Madam
Mr.
Chair.
Mr. Green.
Members of the committee, Jim Green with the Oregon School Boards Association here on the dash A7 amendments, and you've been handed out a Department of Justice interoffice memo regarding this little statutory change, and this is truly one of those fix-it bills for something that got missed. Several sessions ago, you granted municipal corporations the ability to do biennial budgets, including school districts in that. The Lebanon School District has worked very closely with their community, their teachers union, and everybody to do a biennial budget based on the appropriation that you give them to the state school fund. The Attorney General's Office, being the Attorney General's Office, found a statutory reference, however, in ORS 328, and you'll see in the dash 7, it is ORS 328-542, where it said that each school district had to prepare an annual budget. That was missed when you allowed municipal corporations to do biennial budgets. This is language that the AG says, if you look at that memo real quickly, is the only change that needs to be made to allow school districts to do biennial budgets. I've talked to the Department of Education. I've talked to everybody concerned with the bill. This is truly a technical fix. The Lebanon School District would like to be able to do biennial budgets. However, because of a miss several sessions ago, they're not allowed to, and this language in the A7s would allow them to do that. They have to adopt by resolution the ability to do biennial budgets, which means it's a very public process at the local district level. There was great discussion about this, and they just want to have the ability to do biennial budgets. This would allow them to do that.
Okay. Do you have any comments, Mr. Allen, about the dash 7s? Anybody have any questions about the dash 7s? Okay. You're good to go.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right. So who's next?
Let's dispose of them as we go.
I think so.
Madam Chair, I move the dash A7 amendment to House Bill 2263.
Senator Cruz moves the dash A7 amendment to House Bill 2263. Any discussion? So ordered. Okay, that's checkmarked.
Now we're up to 8.
Okay. All right.
Chair Walker, members of the committee, Morgan Allen, again, Department of Education, here to speak on behalf of the A9 amendments.
A9.
And I've submitted written testimony, which I'll try to summarize very briefly because I know time is short. 2263, as you know, eliminates the statutory references to SIM and CAM. That stays in there. The A9s are attempted to bring clarity and flexibility to how we go about working on school improvement in Oregon. As you guys know, that the Oregon statutes and the federal statutes, there's sort of a confusing mix of information that's hard to understand and at times contradictory, AYP report cards, etc. And with the backdrop of No Child Left Behind reauthorization and the disruption of our TESSA testing program and students going to paper and pencil, the amendments are just really designed to help clarify how we look at school and district performance, how we identify schools in need of assistance, and how we report that information to the public. So currently under the revised statute, the department and the superintendent have only two options if a district is as difficulty. Essentially, we can continually warn them through a written letter, and then if things don't get better over a certain period of time after we've warned them repeatedly, our only option is to fully remove their state school funding, and neither of those options really produces a desirable report. So with that as a brief backdrop, the Department of Education stakeholders came together to bring forward the A9 amendments, and generally the amendments give the department flexibility around the individual report card and the state report cards and allow the department to help account for schools that have score fluctuations due to disruptions such as the TESSA disruption. It implements a process for creating a progressive system of intervention in schools and school districts in need of improvement. It requires us to sit down with the education stakeholders and come up with a plan that's somewhere between a slap on the wrist and taking away their state school funding money to come up with a way to help them improve.
Yeah,
seem to be a hammer here. It was either you did it or you got the hammer.
That's right.
Feather or a hammer.
And to my knowledge, and Pat Burke, correctly, we've never yanked state school funding from a district, and we wouldn't want to because that punishes the kids. Okay. Again, the last thing it updates and clarifies the data collected and reported in the statewide reporting card, which again gives us more flexibility as No Child Left Behind is reauthorized. So there's a brief explanation of each major section on page 2 of my written testimony, which I won't discuss. But again, this will have a minimal fiscal impact to the department. We already collect and collect the data for the statewide report cards, the individual district report cards, and we already produce all those things. So we're just changing the work that we do. So it should have a minimal fiscal impact on us, which we believe we can absorb with current staff. Again, we work very closely with education stakeholders to draft this. The Oregon Education Association, COSA, OSBA, and the department and the superintendent are all in support of this, and we would respectfully ask that you adopt the A9 amendments and move them along with the rest of the bill, which is...
Okay, you've kept the House Education Committees in the loop about what you were doing over here, and I see Beth Ann Darby's shaking her head, which doesn't show up on the record, Ms. Darby.
Beth Ann Darby with the Oregon Education Association. I'm just here very quickly to say, yes, we have kept the other chamber involved in these amendments, and they are supportive. We think that from the Oregon Education Association's perspective, we think this is very good accountability amendment, and we sure hope that you will support it.
Okay.
All right. I thought the head shake was more articulate.
It was very vigorous, that was for sure.
Yes, it was. Yes. But, you know, as a court reporter, comes in parentheticals. Shakes head, nods head. Not good. Okay, Mr. Burke, did you want to respond to any of this or add anything?
Madam Chair, Pat Burke with the Department of Education. Just very briefly, the Dash 9s contain material that we already collect from school districts and put into statute, something that we call the continuous improvement process. There's extensive direction and data collection and reporting that districts do in that process. What the amendments do is help align that process to the public reporting process, and then the third step is aligning the intervention that the State Department would provide in terms of technical assistance and support for districts needing improvement. So we see these amendments as being a real important step forward in aligning our processes and coming more in alignment with our federal processes. I beg the committee's pardon, I need to say one thing that I thought of sitting in the back after I talked about civics, because I love Oregon schools, and Oregon schools do great work. And I just wanted the committee to know, if you didn't see in the newspaper, that Grant High School took third place nationally in the constitutional law competition in Washington, D.C. So there's some evidence that some of our kids are doing exceptionally well in their knowledge of government. Thank you, Madam Chair, for your indulgence.
Is Grant's not in your district, is it, Senator Metzger?
No, it's actually the alma mater of Senator Ted Farioli, although my business is located in the Grant School District, and that is actually a tremendous tribute to those kids, and should be noted that they receive their constitutional training from volunteers, lawyers within the city, who are not licensed teachers, but do a great job of preparing them for, I had to throw that in, but obviously are able to communicate effectively with the kids to achieve great things.
Must have been a charter school.
All right, no more of that.
Madam Chair?
Yeah.
I move the Dash A9 amendment, House Bill 2363.
Okay.
Let's cut to the chase.
Senator Cruz moves the Dash A9 amendment to House Bill 2263. Any discussion? I know, Senator Metzger, you were kind of concerned about the SIMCAM.
Well, the underlying bill I won't be voting for, but I'm certainly happy to put your amendments in.
Okay. All right. So any further discussion? So ordered. Okay, so we've got the A7s and the A9s.
One more to go.
The Marquis, we have the A6s and A8s from you. I'm assuming it's the A8s you wish.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Matt Marquis representing the College Board. I think Representative Comp has done great testimony to her amendments. I believe she would prefer the A8s to the A6s. I know she's worked hard with her colleagues and several of her colleagues in the House on both sides of the aisle in trying to draft these.
Okay.
I'd be happy to answer any questions, but I think her testimony pretty much.
She did a good job with her testimony. Any questions from the committee?
Well, maybe just a comment, Madam Chair, is that I understand what the amendment does and allows the expenditure to, you know, meet the goal of the aid amendment. Mm-hmm. But it's $550,000 in a policy decision that can be made by Ways and Means to allocate that, correct? I mean, I think this sends this bill to Ways and Means, which might be a good way to keep the SimCam from being not ended, because the bill will probably not come out of Ways and Means. But truthfully, I mean, $500,000, I can't see the president taking this bill to the floor if you're going to add that policy, that expenditure decision to it. I mean, that's just... Am I wrong about that?
Not at a $500,000 level.
So, I mean, it's just something for everybody to consider, whatever. I don't have a dog in that fight, but...
It shifts money around. It doesn't add money. It just shifts it.
So all our money is shifted. I mean, we don't add anybody either. We just shift it.
Substantive fiscal impact.
Yeah.
It's just, I mean, the money is already there. We're not asking for additional money. The money is already there, so we're just shifting it
from ESDs to
right
this.
But
they're got to make that decision, though.
If I may, Madam Chair, it's not just the amount of money; it's the expenditure approval in certain categories.
Okay, Senator Cruz. What are you thinking?
You know, it's that funny little thing that just because a department or an agency has the money in their coffers, it doesn't mean they can spend it.
Mm-hmm.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, while it's obviously up to the president's office whether it goes to Ways and Means or not, there have been other bills that have come out of this chamber that do a very similar appropriation. In fact, if you look at the amendments on page 3, the current laws from lines 20 through 24 and 25 through 27, 28 through 29, all of those types of appropriations out of the state school fund happen all the time without the bill going to Ways and Means. So there is a precedent.
And tell me again what amendment you're looking at.
I'm looking at the A8 amendment. Okay. Excuse me, I'm sorry, okay. Madam Chair.
The A8.
If you look on page 3, under current law, where you look at lines 20 through 24, it talks about the state school fund for a facility grant. Lines 25 through 27, it talks about high cost disability. 28 through 30 on page 3 talks about a transfer for small school districts. All of those bills, when they've passed, not all of them this session, some of them this session, to reallocate those, have done so without going to Ways and Means. So while I agree it's definitely up to the president's office, there have been some items that have done something very similar without.
Madam Chair, I'd point out that those sections require the Department of Ed. This new section makes it permissive. It says May.
On line 1 on page 4 of the amendment, it says each fiscal year the Department of Education may expend up to $550,000 from the state school fund.
I'm sorry.
So we're not requiring it. It's a may.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Has this been processed with co-chairs?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Co-Chair Schrader has had a copy of the amendments. And I don't know as to the substance of the bill. I don't know if he liked or disliked 100%. He did not tell me, but we did have a conversation about whether or not it should go to Ways and Means. And at that time, prior, just in discussing the amendment before he had read them, I don't want to speak for him, but I believe that he did not think that it probably would need to go to Ways and Means.
Mm-hmm. Madam Chair, well, I'm going to move the -8 amendment to House Bill 2263.
Okay. Senator Cruz moves the -8 amendment to House Bill 2263. Any further discussion?
Does this have support from within the educational community?
I don't hear anyone coming up here and saying no. Is there? They're all in the room. I see COSA, I see OSBA, I see OEA, I see the Department of Ed, and nobody's getting up, and they have an opportunity to do so right now if they have an objection. Mr. Marquis, do you want to explain? Have you talked to anyone?
I've been here.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I believe they're all neutral.
That's my understanding as well.
Well, again, though, I don't want to speak for them, but I believe they are neutral.
If they weren't, they
would. You have to, I think.
And representation is that they're all neutral, which means it can mean they don't care. It could mean they don't want to fight about it. It could mean a lot of things, but they're all quite capable of fighting about things if they are opposed. I mean, this group of people is very well talented and have the ability to do that. They're not doing it, so I don't think there's a problem here. I think Representative Comp made a good case for why it's important to do this.
I did, too.
So, any other questions or discussion? Okay. Any objection? Does somebody need me to take the roll on this one? Okay. So ordered.
Madam Chair, because there is no subsequent referral, I would prefer to move this to the floor, and it's up to the, if the president wants to do something else, that's his discretion. But because the bill currently has no referral, if it's okay with you, that's the motion I will make.
I think that would be an appropriate motion. I think Mr. Marquis's comments about what's already done without having to go to Ways and Means works, and if we're all wrong and all wet, we'll be told.
Okay, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2263 as amended to the Senate floor with a DPAS recommendation.
Senator Cruz moves House Bill 2263A as amended to the floor of the Senate with a DPAS recommendation, and I know Senator Metzger would like to have a moment.
Well, just briefly, I won't take the committee's time up other than to reiterate what I said when we had heard the bill originally. I understand where we're going and not necessarily disapprove of that. But because of the tremendous work that some districts, particularly in my largest district, North Clackamas, did in implementing SIM effectively with students, and feeling when the word came out in the newspaper, of all places, that from the superintendent that it was now dead after basically holding everybody's feet to the fire for so long, it kind of came as a real disconnect for a lot of my teachers who felt that, the legislature, changing 180 degrees again without much input from them. And so I'm going to vote no, mostly to support the great efforts they did in trying to meet our mandate with SIM, despite the lack of funding and other issues that went along with it.
And I respect that, Senator Metzger. I agree with you. I think this could have been an experiment that worked, but I don't think that it worked well because there wasn't, I've always said all along, it wasn't marketed well. It wasn't marketed to the community colleges, the universities, to employers, and so it just became a real problem. And at this point, I think what they've done here is acceptable, but I want to recognize especially your school district, North Clackamas, who has done extremely well with its MCAM. So I accept your protest vote. Senator Westland.
Madam Chair, I have concerns about the Ways and Means issues here. So I will be a no on this. I'll just leave it at that. It's what we're functionally doing is substantively deciding Ways and Means issues in a substantive committee, and I believe that is most properly done within the Ways and Means process.
May I respond just briefly?
Mm-hmm.
Because I find it interesting, you talk quid pro quo. I see Ways and Means doing substantive amendments to substantive bills, which is not in their purview as well. So both sides have guilt in this. I would also suggest that it will be very simple for the president to have a conversation with the co-chair
as to what he would prefer to see happen with the bill. If he has made accommodation, then why clog up Ways and Means with another substantive bill, because there's a ton down there.
Over 200.
And it's just my fear over time that we see too many good policy bills getting caught in the logjam and never emerging. And so I think it's appropriate that we give, I mean, the president has the discretion and the ability to do anything he wants with a bill that comes to his desk. So,
and with the motion that you made, I think we've given him that discretion.
Yes.
To do it. Okay. Does that change your mind at all, Senator Westland?
If you need me, Madam Chair, I'm an accommodating soul.
Okay. Senator Morris, where are you?
Well, I think there's a policy issue here that's in the hands of the president, and I'm willing to defer that decision to the president.
Okay. All right. So I think I know where we're at then. Ms. Gravel, the roll.
Senator Mitchell?
No.
Senator Morris?
Aye.
Senator Westland?
Nope.
Vice Chair Cruz?
Aye.
Chair Walker?
Aye. This is interesting.
You're in uncharted territory.
We are. I'm voting a bill out of my committee with two Republicans. But, you know, we're a bipartisan committee. I think we've done good work. And this bill passes. And it's going to the Senate President to decide whether it needs to go to Ways and Means. And if it doesn't, you're carrying it. Senator Cruz on the floor.
I like to have fun.
Senator Westland, would you like to serve notice of a minority report?
No, I would not.
Bills related to education, we can have a lot of fun with it.
All right, before we adjourn, colleagues, at your desk here is the letter response from the Oregon University System regarding the letter we all signed off on asking them to review programmatic resource fees. The letter is signed by George Pernsteiner, Chancellor, as well as Melissa Unger, Executive Director of Oregon Student Association. So with Melissa's signature and also my phone call follow-up, they are in agreement with the path that the university system is taking and the State Board of Higher Education. And I thank you all for signing on to the letter, and we will be revisiting this as they come back with their report for the 2008-09 academic year. So I hope you're all pleased with the results of that. Okay, thank you. I'll see you Thursday in this committee. We're adjourned.